You're listening to Themes and Memes, a different kind of movie review. I'm your host, Aaron, and here with me is my co-host, Adam. How are you doing, Adam?
Hey, Aaron. I'm good. Good to be back again.
Yeah. We have, of course, today's not a movie review. This is like the second show in a row that we haven't done that, but a special show, to be sure, a sad show. Kind of sad. Yep. What are we doing here today, Adam?
Well, we just thought that we would talk about somebody who passed away in the last couple of weeks, and that would be Alan Watt from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com. Somebody who had a huge impact on both of our lives over the years. And he apparently died in his home in Canada on the 4th of March. There is no information on how it happened, and people close to him are refusing to comment. It seemed that he has left us. And I'll be honest, that the news hit me harder than I thought it would. In one way, I was surprised to hear of this, but in another, I wasn't. And I'm sure we'll talk about why that is. But I can't necessarily speak for you, Aaron, in saying that he had a huge impact on your life, but I would guess that to be the case.
Yeah,
I mean, we've yeah.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Definitely an impact on everything that I'm doing here online. You know, with this podcast, with the Age of Transitions. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Big influence. I used to listen to his show regularly. It's been a long time since I have, but I listened to it, and I actually, my wife bought his set of the three books for me for a gift one time for like a birthday or something. So I've read the books. And nice. I've sent him an email a while back, but that was a long time ago. I never kept up correspondence with him. I know that. Do you want to talk about you in that regard? Yeah. I don't know if you wanted to on here, but
yeah. I mean, all I'll say is that I was introduced to him in the first instance about 10, 11 years ago by a good friend of mine in Scotland. And, took me a while to come around to his, his way of talking and the ideas that he was communicating. But I really, in the end, found that he had a huge, probably the biggest impact on my view of the world in terms of the alternative media figures that we've been grown up with in a way, these figures of the last 10, 20 years in the alt media, he's had more impact on my life and my views than anybody. And it was strange because I hadn't listened to his Cutting Through the Matrix episodes, podcast, he calls them blurbs, for the past couple of years. I had emailed him back and forth occasionally over the years, but it had been years since I'd heard from him and years since I'd listened to him. And then in December of 2019, he sent me a random email on Christmas Day, just reaching out and saying hello and saying, wherever you are, I hope you're doing well. And don't know if you're still listening, but keep in touch, that kind of thing. Just a friendly hello. And that was something of a surprise, I guess, but it was nice. And we kept in touch off and on over the last year. And the last I spoke to him via email was at the end of February. I think exactly a week before his death. So, we had a brief email correspondence. And, without going into any detail, I will say that the last time I heard from him, he sounded a little off. I didn't think much of it at the time, but, then I got the news shortly after that... He'd passed away at his home.
Yeah.
So, that was sad.
It's definitely, it's a sad and mysterious situation to be sure. But I mean, it's not surprising that the mystery is there as to what happened. Alan was a very private person, which is definitely, I respect the way that he did that. He rarely would really even say anything about himself when he was doing his show, when he was doing any sort of material. It was like very rare that he would talk about his dogs and he'd be like, oh yeah, Hamish is doing good today. Or like, I feel like that was the most often you would really hear much about him from him, you know, which I respected that, but
yeah,
he lived a very private life, to be sure.
Yeah, it would seem so. I mean, I would guess, and it seems that he did have some network of people around him, who were fairly close, I guess. But yeah, he never really went into his personal life much. He would tell the odd story about this, that, or the next thing, but it was generally quite vague. You know, he wasn't into sort of dates or times or places or details. He would just sort of relay the odd experience or maybe complain about something that was challenging him in his day to day life. But again, yeah, never anything personal, too personal at least. And his whole approach, I think, was that he didn't want to be a celebrity. He didn't want to be about him. He was very anti the sort of cult of personality thing that was, which was definitely a big part of the conspiracy truth movement, shall we say.
Oh yeah.
You know, for a long time, he was anti all of that. He was about the information, you know, and he stuck to his guns on that.
Yeah. I mean, he could have, he was a genuinely incredibly interesting person. And so he could have like gone and on about personal stories, I'm sure. I mean, he was a professional studio musician, right? That's what he had done.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He was a session guitarist. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is, I mean, talk about interesting. He must have just had so many good stories, guaranteed.
Yeah, guaranteed. I mean, that guy traveled the world, you know, traveled the world meeting all kinds of interesting people, all kinds of strange and wonderful experiences, and perhaps some not so wonderful as well. Yeah. But he lived a lot and he saw a lot. But at some point anyway, I mean, I don't know the exact details of how all this progressed, but I think in the late 90s, he started to pop up here and again on some of the Patriot radio stations.
Yes, I think he began as a caller, right? He would call into shows. Is that what happened?
I don't know, but I believe so. Because it was these call-in interviews where you phone in and then you can either listen to it or you can speak to the hosts. And
back in shortwave radio days, right?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah. Again, this is before my time, so.
I think that's how he started. He started as a caller in a shortwave radio, I think. And the stuff that he would say on there was so interesting that the host started bringing him on as a guest. It was a woman's show, but I can't remember the name of it.
That would be Jackie Petru. That's right.
Is that it? Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the station. Mm-hmm. It was some classic kind of Patriot name. Something very, very predictable. Freedom Radio or something. American Freedom, American Freedom Radio.
Well, American Freedom Radio is a different one. Alan later would go on Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN.
That was later on, though. Oh, that was his own show, though.
That was a few years later. He started calling into Jackie Petru's show, as you're saying, and again on one of those networks. I'm sure it was like Eagle Flag Patriot Radio or something like that, lines. First Amendment Radio or something, I don't know.
So it was
something like that, and he would call in, and I think even to this day, I believe he had posted to cuttingthroughthematrix.com like old transcripts of his calls with her. I believe.
Yeah, I have some, actually.
Yeah, I saved it at one point, and I'm pretty sure they're transcripts from those, and I think that's how things started for him, doing the radio thing.
I believe so, yeah. A good friend of mine who got me into all this stuff, who introduced me to his work, I think he's got a huge collection. I think he's got just about everything. I've listened to a few of those. They're good. They're really interesting, but... He found after a period of time that he was getting popular on these sort of Christian patriot, shortwave radio type broadcasts. But then then it didn't. Yeah, they sort of didn't work out because he was talking about bigger concepts that were going beyond the sort of esoteric understanding of the of religion and things like that.
Yeah, he was a bit of a misfit, to be sure, and certainly he wasn't coming from the Christian conservative point of view. That wasn't his own.
No, and I remember him saying, like, quite specifically at one point that he felt he'd sort of burned his bridges with that, those networks and those people, because they were pressuring him to toe the line, essentially, you know, to sort of to support the Patriot sort of worldview, the Christian conservative, like, it's
here's these talking points, please repeat them properly, what it was like, essentially. That's probably what was going on, and he wouldn't do it, I assume, and so he just parted ways is probably what happened.
Yeah, and that, well, I think in his own words, they said that they hadn't been calling him back for a while. So, and I think it the same went with some of the more New Age shows. So if you recall, do you remember what Red Ice Radio was
correct
back in the day when they first started?
Correct, in the very beginning of Red Ice Radio, he was one of the regular guests.
Yeah, he did some amazing talks as well. He did some amazing stuff in the first, I would say, 5 years of Red
Those
Ice.
Were good.
He was
Those
on
were
a lot.
Good.
There were some really good ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but once again, I think he commented in the same, and I think it was the same blurb. He commented that he couldn't really, in all conscience, keep up with those guys either, because he wouldn't. They were into the New Age stuff, and they were into the UFOs and the aliens and the reptiles and the bloody, all the fantasy, feel good, exciting, you know, the mystery stuff. And he was very much of the opinion that most of this was kind of like counterintelligence type stuff, you know, disinformation that's designed to confuse people and just sort of keep them stupid and entertained and things like that. So
yeah, it's basically just entertainment and nothing more.
Yeah, exactly. Feel good stuff. It's, you know, it's mystical. It's fantastic. I mean, I used to love that stuff, but after a period of time, you realize that there's nothing of substance in any of it, because it's all just speculation about paranormal things which can't be proven either way. So
that's true. That's true. Yeah, captivating, but not so useful as something to hold on to change things for the better. So
yeah. Or even as a tool in your own personal growth, even, you know, because the stuff it takes all the focus away from you as an individual, what you can do for yourself, and makes it about God knows what, something else, something external, something mysterious, something fun, but ultimately useless. So,
Well, the thing
he was very against that.
The thing with Alan that I always found fascinating, and he had a true mystique about him, which I think is part. I know it's part of the appeal of him, is that he would do that, and he'd be like, he'd lay out like sort of just matter of fact sort of things, and fairly dry yet extremely disturbing topics like eugenics, for instance. Yeah. He was big on that. He would do that, but he would also kind of like, here and there he would mention like spiritual things and like, you know, the true reality is something more, but he would never like go into it deeply. So there's always that mystique, like, boy, I wonder what Alan really thinks about all that. That's kind of interesting that he would say that.
It is. I know exactly what you're talking about there. And I think my perception in that respect was in regards to that was that, he held his own views and whatever they were, he didn't want to, he felt that they could be too easily become a distraction.
Oh yeah.
You know, that once he starts talking about whatever his views are on metaphysics, for example, then he's just going to get hounded for it by all the people who want him to tell them what they already want to hear, basically, which was the problem, you know.
Correct. Yes.
People who want him to confirm their own biases and beliefs. And he didn't want that at all. And he has his ultimate sort of, he kept coming back to the saying that the truth of yourself and who you really are is what matters at the end of the day, and it's completely correct.
Yeah.
So I don't think he wanted to distract people.
Yeah. So. No. That was always just very interesting, intriguing, and I mean, so he started as a caller on these shortwave shows. Pretty sure they were shortwave radio. Then later he had the RBN show for a time, and he was his own host, and he would get the callers call in at the end of the show. I always thought that was probably my favorite part of the show, is when the callers would call in, actually. I don't know how you felt about that.
Yeah, I did enjoy it, because you would have some of the most interesting people.
Yeah, all right.
Would call in. Some real characters. Yeah, would call in on that really low quality sort of crackly phone, connection.
Yep.
Asking all kinds of, random questions out the blue about all kinds of things. And He always treated everybody with respect, unless they were being blatantly confrontational or whatever, and trying to stir things up. Then he would always treat people with respect and kindness, and that was
true classic radio to me. Is Alan Watt taking calls on his RBN show and just think about it, that that was legitimately entertaining. That was a good part of the show, and to see what his answer was to certain questions was always interesting too. It's like, oh, okay, that's how he answered that. Okay.
he had an answer for everything. He knew something about everything. Something interesting too. Whatever question you asked him about, he would have an angle that you'd never considered before, which I found immensely valuable and interesting over the years.
And then I don't know if I've ever gotten, I feel like I've talked with you about this before, Adam, but I'm going to bring it up here, is that Alan started getting a cult following. I believe this was when, in the earlier days of his RBN show, he had, kind of like almost a fan club, like an unofficial fan club, I would call it, online. And it was kind of, I would say the president of this fan club was a guy who at the time going by the name Andre. And
Andre.
You know this story? have I gone into this with you before?
I think so. A long time ago. Yeah, we've talked about this a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So Andre he started on MySpace. He had one of these MySpace profiles that was just riddled with links to all sorts of like conspiracy topics or whatever. So he got kind of renowned himself with a MySpace page, and then he turned that into outlawjournalism.com, and then he had a forum on Outlaw Journalism, and on the forum, that's where, like, really Alan Watt was held up as, like, the best voice out there in the alternative and whatnot. So there's a lot of people that really liked Alan Watt, including Andre, but the relationship soured there. Where I'm trying to remember how it all worked, but basically they turned on Alan at one point, and eventually Andre is just like, oh yeah, Alan Watt's like full of it, he's terrible, he's disinfo, blah 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 blah. But previously, they were his biggest proponents, and they'd have like all these forums dedicated to stuff he said, and that was crazy, and then of course, Outlaw Journalism only lasted so long before Andre started using his name, Andrew Anglin, and he made his new website, The Daily Stormer, which he does to this day. That's who he is. So Andre became Andrew Anglin, and he became a extreme right-wing neo-Nazi.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, it's possible that this is some loose cannon out there. I mean, they do exist.
Yeah.
But also, it's equally possible that this was some effort to set him up that I could take him down again, So, yeah, create a massive following, push all this momentum and this energy towards them with a leader, and then get the leader to turn against them and try and turn everybody else against them, or at least destroy his reputation in some way.
Yeah.
That's totally possible, especially if this guy's going to become some leader of some neo-Nazi, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's bizarre. It's bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, extremists do exist, but I'm suspicious of them all.
Yeah, so, I hear you, man. You have to be. It's like, oh, where did these wacky ideas come from all of a sudden?
Yeah, it's like, what do you think you're going to achieve with this?
Yeah.
Apart from, making everybody who's maybe a little bit like you look bad, or making everybody who's not in the mainstream look bad, anybody who has associated with you look bad. So
Well,
Yeah.
I mean, I myself used to, I shared emails with Andre back in the day when he was still Andre. We would email here and there. So I think he emailed me first about my documentary and we talked here and there. And then eventually, you know, that was a long time ago. I stopped doing that. And then I just watched the story. I think it was even before the falling out with Alan. And then I just kind of watched from afar to see what happened. And then, you know, one thing leads to another. Like, oh, Daily Stormer now. It's like, just these. I mean, these are the things that happen in this weird sort of world that we're in. And it's just, I mean, you just, it's just these things. And someone like Alan, as a high, because he was high profile within this. Like, everybody knows who he is, you know?
Well, he was regularly on Alex Jones for some
Yes,
years. He was so he was doing prime time Alex Jones interviews for years. He was on Red Ice Radio when that was hot and big for years. He did that 2 hour Prison Planet interview, which is still one of the best ever. It's would totally recommend that to anybody who hasn't seen it.
Yep, it's good.
There's still a couple of copies online. So yeah, he was fairly well known.
Yeah. So someone like himself is going to run into all sorts of stuff like this as they go about stuff. And so, I mean, yeah, you just get like a front row seat to the insanity. And you get the crazed fans too, which at the bare minimum was what was going on there with outlaw journalism, but if not something more nefarious, as you're saying, who we don't really know, but certainly it's something that he had to deal with. So.
Yeah, he talked about it, and there was plenty of stuff on his website about the troubles that he'd been having with people trying to basically pawn off his work, you know, like steal it, copy it, sell it, distribute it with it, whatever, you know, making a mess and trying to run him out of business, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, so yeah, this was present in his life for some years. I know that much. I don't know the details. However, didn't that guy Andre eventually put together some kind of like a dossier on Ellen, where he had this big theory about why Ellen did
I
this
think
information and
so. I
blah blah
think so.
blah?
Yes, it was a big post he put up, like this, that, the other thing. Like I only like bits and pieces are coming back to me. Like I recall him saying like the cadence of Alan's voice is meant to like put you in a trance and things like that. You know, like.
I remember that. I think I remember reading this on a PDF,
Yeah,
actually.
yeah.
And I believe, I could be wrong here, but I think you actually sent it to me.
Probably, probably.
Yeah, but this is going back like almost 10 years
Oh,
now.
you know what else was in there? It was
So.
they were accusing him of ripping off the material of this really wacky guy,
Oh,
Glenn
yeah, it was.
Keeley.
Oh, Glenn Keely, that's
You remember that
right.
character?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's right. That's what was in the dossier, the Glenn Keely
Yeah.
connection.
It's like,
Some,
and Andrew was like so upset that he was coming from this angle, like, yeah, Alan Watts always complaining about copyright issues and people stealing his stuff, but in reality, he stole his stuff from Glenn Keeley, so he's a hypocrite. Is I think the main crux of what his argument was.
basically, that was it. I remember it's coming back to me the more we speak to it, and it was basically that.
Yeah.
But
Talk about a fringe character, Glenn Keeley. My gosh, I don't know how many people know of him, but man, that's all that he had his own. He was basically a not very successful cult leader, is what Glenn Keeley was. And I remember one person in particular from the Outlaw Journalism Forum had moved over to finding Glenn Keeley and basically became like the protege, and like I think he lived with Glenn Keeley at one point, and like so he would just verbatim spout out this weird Glenn Keeley stuff, which I don't think we have time to explain the
No.
Glenn Keeley view of the world, but
Yeah, let's.
it's something else.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just remember reading that whatever, yeah, this PDF dossier, whatever it was, about how Alan, what is this disinfo agent who's stolen a bunch of other people's work, mostly from Glenn Keely, and is some plant, or he's a setup, or whatever, you know. And I remember reading it all, thinking that there was absolutely nothing in any of this that was the least bit convincing. So, yeah, what, who, yeah, wh why, who, whoever that was, whoever Andre is, was, yeah, I, whatever, I don't care. That's
a character, so, yeah. But Alan himself, I mean, I think that to me, I mean, he, to me, he has always come across as genuine, legitimate.
Absolutely.
And I think most people just like get that. He just kind of exudes that because he doesn't, again, he's a misfit. He was a continual misfit. All these different places he'd pop up, Alex Jones, Red Ice, the early days of shortwave Christian right-wing radio.
Yeah.
He would appear on all these different spots where he got notoriety, which is good. His ideas got out there, which I think is what he was getting his main plan. But then he would always eventually kind of like call out those very same people like, hey, look, I've been on this, I've been on that. Doesn't mean I endorse it. And in fact, you probably ought to look out for these people. He would do that like with every one of these platforms.
Yeah, I remember specifically him, like he would go on Alex Jones and just, he'd do whatever it was, a half an hour, a little slot or something like that. And he'd be personable and polite, and he would talk in his usual calm cadence, very, very soberly, you know, and consciously about whatever the subject was. But then these comments would come up, you know, on his own show, maybe a couple of weeks later, about people really need to be careful about the superstars of the truth movement, you know, mm-hmm. and how these guys are big money men. You've been clearly set up. I mean, that's the guys who've had you know, serious financial backing, and you have to be wary of that.
Yeah.
So
that was always interesting to see. That was always like, it was always fun to kind of see that, quite frankly, to see just come forward with them, like, and he just kind of I wouldn't say skewers a certain person, but just like, hey, look, you know, like be careful. You know, so I always liked that, respect that, found it interesting and
valuable,
to me, very valuable to the people who could, like, because it's very difficult. It's I think it was a very difficult thing he was doing, a very tall order he was putting out there, because the way this stuff usually works is like, you know, you have a show, you have a source of information that comes out there. It gives you all these ideas about the world that, in most cases, the creator of these shows and stuff just wants you to just take these ideas and just repeat them and do nothing more. And he would reject that, be like, hey, look, I'm putting out these ideas, but that's not, you know, I'm not making this brand. I'm not making this like cult where I want to control your entire worldview. That's actually, I do believe he was very much trying his best to avoid that, which is antithetical to the usual kind of way about going about this, where the big names do, they specifically want you to do that. They want you to become a club member.
Yeah. No, they want a movement. They want, you know, team colors and team slogans. And yeah, I mean, the internet's more full of them now than ever.
Mm-hmm.
On every niche, there's an endless list of these narcissists, I want to call them, for the most part, to be honest. who are about the fame, quite clearly, who will create big sensation and big drama because they want attention and money, and it's fun. And he was not one of those people. He had no interest in that, and he said himself many times, I could have made a lot of money doing what I'm doing, and I had many offers, but I needed to stay true to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And man, you got to respect that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's a huge sacrifice to do what he did because he believed in it. You know, I'm not going to be compromised by anybody. I will say what I want to say in the way I want to say it. You know.
Yeah.
I
think
that's a rare thing.
Yeah, it is. I think a lot because he has plenty of detractors too. I believe that his detractors should at least give him that because he deserves it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like he doesn't get enough credit for that. But definitely that's who he was. You could see that. And I mean, there were so many topics. This is the other thing with him that was, impressive was he was the first to bring up a lot of different topics. I mean, he was the thing that got me interested in him actually was I was just starting to look up transhumanism, and he was the only person within like this sphere of information, like this weird, whatever it is, alternative take on things that was even talking about transhumanism. Like, oh, here's somebody that's actually talking about it. So he was the first one I can think of talking about that. And he talked about eugenics and even like psychopathy. He was talking about psychopathy a long time ago. And then, you know, I would say that Thomas Sheridan kind of like picked up that ball and rolled with it and wrote the books. And then from there, I feel like after Thomas Sheridan wrote his books on the topic, it became mainstream with John Ronson. And even like beyond that, where just people were starting to talk about the topic.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? I saw that happen in real time, 100%. Even just the terms like gaslighting. I mean, I'd never, ever heard that apart from when Thomas Sheridan mentioned it in his books over and over and over again, you know, and his vlogs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, within the next 6 months to a year, all the mainstream journalists were using the same thing. They're all talking about gaslighting this and gaslighting that. And then John Ronson's book came out, and all the mainstream critics said that Puzzling People is a joke of a book. People should read John Ronson instead.
As if that's not a joke.
I know. Puzzling People is a fantastic book. We're kind of getting off topic here, but I saw that happen in real time. I mean, you know, someone like Thomas Sheridan come out and put something very, very good out there, and
Thomas did a good job.
Shunned.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got shunned and basically plagiarized, and he was made to look like a nobody, while the big names basically stole his kind of idea, really, or a lot of the concepts and sort of motifs and made big money on it. Yeah. So that
And these were topics that they came out of the underground. They really did. And Alan has always been on the cutting edge of he's done it with a lot of topics. I mean, there's a lot.
Yeah.
And the thing is, his detractors would be like, oh yeah, he's like a paranoid weirdo that's just fueling other paranoid weirdos to have all these weird ideas about the world. But there's just so much that he was really avant-garde, cutting edge in so many things, and he deserves the credit for that. And the people on the outside, they don't see it, and they beyond that they like give him this hard time, like he doesn't know what he's talking about. Where he's actually informed so much conversation that people just have no idea where this conversation even came from in the first place.
Absolutely. I mean, I wasn't there for that. By the time I got into this stuff, so sort of 2008 onwards, the impact that he'd had had already long been felt. He'd already had a huge difference because my good friend Scott in Glasgow, who was the one who introduced me to Alan's work, told me from his story and his perspective that he was getting into all this stuff, say from about, let's say from 2004 onwards. So first you had films like Fahrenheit 9/11, then you had Michael Rupert's 9/11 stuff, then you had Alex Jones's stuff, but it was all very, very, very confined to an American context, a sort of a conservative framework, you know, in a lot of ways.
The Patriot Radio framework. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Not necessarily Michael Moore, but this was the beginnings of this sort of Patriot movement, which became the Truth Movement, you know, and it was very basic. They were kind of navel gazing and talking about the Constitution, and that was about it. You know, like,
A lot of it was born out of groups like the John Birch Society, too. And that's why it had that decidedly right-wing tinge to all of it.
Yeah, John Birch Society stuff, exactly. Mm-hmm. And some of that is true. You know, there's stuff that needs to be looked into there, and Alan definitely brought some of that to the fore. Like the Rees Commission, for example.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, people need to look at that stuff. But again, I wasn't there. I didn't experience this. But from what I've heard, when Alan Watt basically came on the scene, he changed everything. All of a sudden, people like Alex Jones and even David Icke and a lot of the other big names out there were picking up on his stuff and essentially, in a lot of ways, plagiarizing it.
Yes.
And he got quite bitter about that over the years, Alan did. And he still mentioned it right up until his death. He was talking about a certain, he never named who it was. I pretty damn sure I know exactly who he's talking about. But yeah, there's a particular person who's a fairly prominent member of the alternative media who who seems to have used Alan Watts' website as a free resource to mine for his own profit making. Stuff.
Yeah, of course. Well, anybody who puts out any material has this happen to them. I mean, I, on a much smaller scale, have had this happen to me. I try not to complain about it much, but it has, basically. But the thing, the way that I like to work is like, look, I was inspired by Alan Watt. And like, if it weren't for him, I wouldn't have started looking at topics like eugenics the way I did. And these other people just will not do that. It's not like, oh, I decided to write this book because I saw this documentary or I read this or I came across this. They just like regurgitate something and don't even, they act like they're the first ones to ever say it.
Yeah. God, you know what I mean?
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of that.
Definitely. Definitely. You see, I've seen plenty of it, seen it all the time. And I always made the effort to at least mention them now and again. You know, and I think we've mentioned them on Themes and Memes over the years least a few times.
I'm sure that we've mentioned Alan a few times.
I know it. I know we have. And he, I mean, he would mention your stuff as well.
I guess he did a couple of times. Yeah, that's true. Well, I've forgotten that.
There's the most recent update on his website is a group of links that the managers of the website have put up, and there's a link to your film in there.
Oh, cool.
So the Age of Transitions has been selected to go up on that site.
That's exciting. That's cool. I know. Well, I mean, I included a clip from his show, him talking to a caller in the video.
And I remember that,
I had asked him, like, hey, look, like, this is cool that I do this, right? And I sent him emails. I thanked him, and I sent him little thank you gifts in the mail and stuff. And so I made sure to be like, not just do it and like never talk to him. I did at the time talk to him in a little bit about that. And I just wanted to make sure that I didn't just do it without getting a hold of him. So I did that. And I know that after the fact, he did mention it on the show. So it was cool. It's like, okay, he approves of this. This is, it's good. Like it made me feel good. Like that's the way that things worked out that way. So it's really, that means a lot to me.
Yeah, cool. I don't know where I found your film, because I found you through your film.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not sure where I found your film, but it might have had something to do with him, because it's come up on his show many, many times over the years.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Talking about Alan, yet I can't help but just talk about this community, this world that, you know, he was such a big part of. And it's just really, I don't know, I say it over and over again, but being a part of this personally, I've just learned so much from it. Yeah, obviously I've learned from Alan Watt and all the stuff that he's brought forward, just in the basic sense of the information that he brings forward, but also just in the process of sharing this. And seeing, you know, like all the ins and outs and the ups and downs and the behind the scenes stuff and, you know, how just the process of disseminating this information works. There's a whole nother like learning level to that too, you know?
Yeah. So absolutely. And then because of his approach, which was very deliberate and very sober, you know, but very calm as well. Mm-hmm. People accused him of being doommonger and being all, you know, gloom and doom, etc. But he was just frank. He was just honest. There was no spin in there. And his point was that you must make the decision for yourself how you're going to respond to this, how you're going to process this and deal with this. That's not for me to decide. You know. But yeah, this I would agree that made me really think about what is it to process this kind of information, to share it? How do you apply it to your own life? How do you talk about it to other people? How you know, there's so much learning, so many questions, you know? There were questions I still wanted to ask him that I won't be able to now, which is sad. But I guess in a way, he probably has given everybody the tools to resolve those questions for themselves anyway. So
I think so.
I think so too, and I would like to think that that's the truth. So, but there was a, as we've mentioned already, there was a price to be paid for what he did.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't have done it. No way. He was a, from what I can glean from his life and the kind of lifestyle he was living, in the last 10 years, at least anyway, it was very, very, reclusive, and possibly depressing for him. I don't know. It seemed that he was struggling financially a lot of the time, struggling with some health issues too. And he'd had his fair share of run-ins over the years as well. I mean, some of the stories that he told back in the day, like, do you remember that guy? He was around about 10 years ago, Dr. Bill Deagle.
I remember the name. I can't remember anything beyond that, though. What was his deal?
So he was a doctor, obviously, and a medical doctor, and he was sort of one of the first names to come out and really, yeah, besides Alan, one of the first names to come out and really start talking about, like, vaccines,
That's right, the
the World
vaccines.
Health Organization, United Nations, this kind of stuff, and just like the big pharma, basically. So that was his specialty. He I haven't seen him for it in forever, but yeah, he was one of the earlier guys in regards to those subjects. And I think Alan went on his show sort of semi-regularly for a period of time. He did at least a few shows with him. And I could be wrong, but I believe it was with this guy, Dr. Bill Deagle, that they were doing a sit-in podcast somewhere. And there was like some crazy story about a black helicopter coming down and buzzing them. You know what I mean? Throwing a smoke grenade down the chimney. Yeah, things like that. Crazy, crazy stuff, like out of a movie. But Alan swore that this actually happened, that they were getting
Really?
harassed by some, like, federal agencies.
I didn't remember that.
Yeah, he mentioned it once or twice. This was a long time ago, but yeah, that story was crazy. There was another time, I think. Yeah, he said he had his brake lines cut in his car a couple of times as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
How
So
did he go about catching that one?
I don't know. I don't know. I think he didn't want to talk too much about these things. I didn't want to give him more energy than they really needed. So, yeah.
You know what's really, this is tangential and kind of dumb actually, but I'm going to say it anyway. I remember watching some old TV docuseries about like conspiracy theory. In fact, I believe, if memory serves me, it was that series that John Ronson hosted about like
Oh,
political
God. Yeah.
extremists or something. And they did this short little segment about like the people who do this stuff believe that they're being followed by the government. They could be taken out at any moment. And they showed this like dramatization of this guy, like this old man in this like workshop. Out like this weird like shed workshop, and the guy to me resembled like Alan Watt. It's like, oh, this is interesting. It's just like this weird reenactment, but it made me think of Alan Watt. And like, oh yeah, if you're Alan Watt, you're a target, and at least this is the story that these people tell. And for some reason, that's like seared in my brain as this weird memory,
Yeah,
you know.
I never saw that, but I for some reason when you just told that story there, I had an image in my head, and I can see how that would have worked. I can, yeah,
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 that's
I
one of those
getcha,
TV
I getcha.
dramatizations, and just to
Yeah.
me, it just appeared like, oh yeah, it's Alan Watt living in his can his Canadian cabin up there in his shed working on something, and it's like,
With his lumberjack shirt on, you know,
exactly,
yeah.
and then the feds come in, they grab him or something like
Oh
that. I don't
God,
know,
yeah. I
yeah,
mean, this, you got to wonder when you see stuff like that, don't you?
yeah,
You
oh
really
yeah,
got to wonder.
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. But you know, it was for the amount of information that he put out, and the way he tied it all together, it's surprising that they didn't really go after him in a much bigger way. But I guess he said himself that, you know, they would be too cocky anyway, so that they didn't see him as a threat or whatever. But
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
I
my
don't know.
general take on all this, is that even like the people that put out good stuff like him, ultimately they don't see them as a threat, not enough to actually, you know, like send a hit squad or anything like that.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem to be the way that things work, as far as I can tell. But that's not to say, yeah, exactly. It'd be more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah. But yeah, I think the intimidation tactics are there not to get them to not to get an individual to stop, but just to remind you that yeah, we're watching you. Sure. So watch it. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, the intimidation is for real. Yeah. Definitely, yeah, intimidation. But beyond that, I don't think it's useful for them to go beyond that phase of things.
I've even had it in my own life, and I won't go into detail. I've talked with you privately about some experiences I've had.
Oh yeah.
But I've been targeted and intimidated by, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
that's for real. I know that. Yep. It's just again one of those things you kind of learn about when you're living this life. I don't know.
You learn fairly quickly where the line is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're sending you a message about what you can and can't get away with, basically. So yeah. Saying, all right, this far but no further. And just remember, we're here and we're always watching. So yeah. I've had a couple of pretty freaky, strange experiences. So, but again, this is the price that I was talking about before. And this is I reflected a lot on this when I learned of his passing. I really did. I thought, man, you know.
Yeah,
I felt sorry. I felt bad for him. I really felt sorry and bad and sad and kind of awful, you know, that he suffered a lot. You know, he really suffered and he really made a lot of sacrifices. And then I don't know how he died. I'm not going to speculate. But what I will say is that I got the feeling that he knew his days were numbered in one way or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will say that. And yeah, I mean the toll, just the psychological toll that it takes on an individual to spend that much time looking through all these news articles and preparing a show and talking. I mean, again, he'd been doing since the whole Corona pandemic thing started, almost exactly a year ago, really, when the lockdowns were starting. Alan had been doing. I'm not sure if I mentioned this already, but he'd been doing a 4-hour blurb podcast every week.
So
on a Sunday night, 4 hours a week, every week. So 52 4-hour episodes. And they were nonstop. You know, there were 4 hours nonstop every week. And that's.
Yeah, that's no hard. That's hard that. To. Yeah, that's hard for me to fathom. Especially, I mean, doing the show that Alan did. I mean, it's not just like somebody going on to Twitch and like talking about video games and stuff, you know? This is like heavy, heavy, dark subject matter. Yeah,
it is. And a lot of it had clearly become routine for him as well, because he used to, remember back in the RBN days, he would do 5 days a week. So he'd do about 45 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Yes, yes.
And he'd had more or less a script that he'd run through at the beginning, you know. So he would sort of talk about Cecil Rhodes and then the Rhodes Foundation and then the Royal Institute for International Affairs, the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission, the United Nations. And it would just go through this sort of very sort of tragedy and hope style. Tragedy and hope condensed into, you know, a few paragraphs, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, you do that once, sort of 5 days a week, and then get into some news articles. And he, from what I understand, from what I've seen at least, he was really the first person who really brought in like things like Agenda 21, the greening, the Club of Rome.
Mm-hmm. A lot of Club of the United Nations stuff. For sure. I want to say he's probably the first one to bring them up.
Yeah, I mean. Again, from what I understand, if you look at like Alex Jones or David Icke, back at that point in time, they weren't talking about any of this stuff at all.
Yeah. You know
it was all 9/11 and aliens, you know?
You know what's fascinating? Yesterday, I read a Daily Beast article that mentioned the Club of Rome. And get this, the Daily Beast article like calls out the Club of Rome for being so wrong in their predictions about, you know, the population bomb, overpopulation. Now we've actually come to a point in the mainstream where it's seeded that actually population reduction is the problem in like major societies today. Like first world countries are
Yeah.
having pop fertility issues. And this is
Yeah,
actually
yeah,
in the mainstream now. You know what I mean? So it's come full circle, really.
It's amazing. Alan would mention that over and over again about how the sperm count of the average Western male had been plummeting since the 1950s by the
Yeah.
United Nations' own records, their own statistics. And yet they never mentioned it. It was never spoken of as a crisis, you know. It
No.
was
And the
a
opposite was a crisis, is there's too many
yeah.
people. And yeah, listen to Club of Rome, and really
Yeah.
the whole like ecological crusade, mostly on the left wing of things, was
Yeah.
that was kind of just like gospel. It's like, yeah, there's too many people, we got to cut down our numbers. And now the opposite is occurring, and it's fascinating to see that to me. I mean, to me, it's endlessly fascinating to see these narratives change.
Yeah, we've seen that a lot lately. In fact, there's all kinds of things that used to be deeply rooted within so-called conspiracy culture or the truth movement or whatever you want to call it, which are now like, yeah, household terms almost. And yeah, I mean, that's another tangent we could go off on forever, but
Yeah, absolutely.
it's fascinating because
It is.
some of these
It
concepts
is.
and motifs are really in like the popular vernacular now, you know?
Yeah, I firmly believe to have any actual understanding of these things and the importance of these topics, you have to go back to like Alan Watt and understand who Alan Watt was and what he was saying, and just the dissemination of these ideas. Like, because this is something that very few people are even aware of at all.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they ever really will be, but I just see that as a key to like understanding, again, like mainstream narratives.
Yeah.
So it's just there's a lot to get. And again, this is like a tribute show to Alan Watt, and sitting here talking about it, it just makes me think more and more of, the what he actually did, and it's impressive, and it deserves praise, and it's exciting, frankly. I mean, the news of his death is horrible, but I think that when you stop and think about it, it's like, geez, he really
He made an
did a lot of,
impact.
yeah, he did. He did.
This is I was talking to my friend about this and we're there's been videos coming up on YouTube by a few people now who are sort of doing a quick dedication to him, sharing some thoughts and you see Thomas Sheridan did one too actually
Okay, cool.
about a week ago and you see the comments and it's just everybody. There's hundreds of people all saying like, "Wow, I can't believe he's gone. He had such a big impact on my life." And you really get a sense of like, "Wow, this man had an impact. I never knew. I thought it was just me because I didn't, there's you and a couple of other people that I even know who he exists that I know." So, but then, I mean, you see that he had a huge impact on a lot of people. Actually, he really did, you know, and. This is something else I contemplated when I learned of his death as well, is that I kind of it hit me, it hit me what an impact he had. It really did. Like, and it, I think his impact may be felt after his death much more strongly than it ever did while he was alive.
Yes, I think so.
This is what I feel, and this is my gut is telling me because I don't know why. I
Yeah, no.
don't know why, but that's the way it's working.
I mean, this is, I don't know, this is sort of a thing too, but I feel like that's kind of like, I get the feeling like this was part of probably Alan's worldview, kind of almost in an esoteric sense, that his understanding of like what can be done in the realm of, consciousness, the realm of ideas, the realm of like just understanding of things. And I believe that he was consciously aware of his mission the whole time. And actually, he's somebody who was actually able to successfully do these things. And I don't know, I get the feeling that's what he was up to, and that it worked, you know?
I get what you're saying. Yeah, I get what you're saying, that perhaps when he died, perhaps he felt in his life that when he died, he wanted his work to be remembered and not him.
Yeah.
So much, and the ideas, because there were some people who knew him or who were closer to him that have written a few articles just addressing the situation, you know. Mm-hmm. And they were saying that we've had a lot of requests from people wanting to get involved, or to you know, asking, is there a funeral, or we would like to do something, like, you know, mm-hmm. set up a monument to him, even, you know.
That's interesting. Yeah,
but they were basically saying, look, that's not really necessary. I totally get this with Alan. I think that they even said there wasn't even going to be a funeral. So I don't know what that means. Mm. Okay, we can, mm-hmm. you know, you can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it.
Yeah. I could believe it too.
I believe it. I feel like I get it. Like I understand.
This is what he wanted, you know.
Yeah, this is what he wanted.
Exactly this.
Yes.
This is exactly what he wanted. Is this. No idolizing him. No him becoming a martyr in his death. No mm-hmm, no people mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No cult of personality, no candles burning in front of a photo of his face. Mm-hmm. This to me is, you know, and this is coming from somebody who had a huge, huge respect and admiration for him, you know, mm-hmm. and I say that, it's not what it was about. This doesn't fit for me. This doesn't fit, you know, this mourning and grieving and making it about him does not what he wanted. That's not what he ever was about. Mm-hmm. I have no desire to do that. I think what's important now is for his work to live on, you know, the ideas mm-hmm. of his books and CDs and DVDs, and his teaching you how to think, essentially, in a way.
Yes, I remember him saying that in those almost exact words, is like, if anything, this book is meant to help you relearn how to actually think, or to be able to actually use your mind for the first time, instead of it being stifled as it's been trained to do.
Yes. It's a strange book to read first time, but then you get where it's going, what he's going at with the linguistics. Mm-hmm. You know?
Oh, yeah, I love it.
To break down the symbolism of language, of the English language itself.
Yeah. Well, he and Jordan Maxwell actually are the two people I think of, like, when you get on the subject of etymology.
Yeah.
And, like, breaking that down, like, hey, look, this is something that actually is valid. And when you start just spending a little time to think of the etymology of words, all of these like fascinating associations pop up, and like really you get you when you look even at a single word, you start getting you start learning its relationship to other words, and not just other words, but the relationship of like the natural world from which that language was derived out of, and like the esoteric meaning involved in that. And to me, that's genuine. I mean, I've sat down and looked at this, and people say, like, well, that's breaking the rules of etymology, it doesn't work that way. Like, I just, again, it's an esoteric thing that to me is legitimate. And when you sit there and you look at it, like, oh, this is how the language was crafted.
And it's constructed.
I mean, and in the mysteries they say, like, look, the true language of nature is that of symbolism, and they're really just trying to emulate that, and making, like, you know, an artificial version of that is what human language is.
And English was a deliberately constructed language. So I mean, mm-hmm. if you look at what the letter A, first letter of the English alphabet, well, first letter of the alphabet, mm-hmm. what is it? It's a pyramid with a capstone, you know what I mean? This, and then you've got the hierarchy as well of letters in that, which I believe E is the top and P is the bottom. I think I don't know what to, in between. I haven't gone.
I mean, there's so
it,
many little details that you can just come up with on your own. Like, I personally find it fascinating, these letters, single letters that are also entire words, which are vowels. You know, like the letter I is also a word I.
Which, when
you break down what I is, it's like one of the most esoteric things you could even contemplate. You know what I mean? Like, so it's just fascinating. Like, the most basic, easy to overlook thing holds like the key to like so much depth of understanding in it. You know,
let's not forget B, huh? You know.
Oh yeah, don't forget B.
B.
Yeah.
The B order. Mm-hmm. Love that one. That was always funny in the book. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's comical too, which is also valuable. So it's fun to have a laugh. But I don't know, Adam, is there anything else that we need to get into on this show? Or is there anything that we forgot? I'm sure there is.
I could talk forever about this. But it's been good to talk about it. I've enjoyed the conversation. I mean, I really... Yeah. This was... I'm glad that we did this. It needed to be done.
Yeah.
You know, it really did.
Yeah, I agree.
And yeah, I'll be honest. I have grieved this loss in a sense, you know, in my own way. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are plenty of other people out there who feel the same way.
Oh yeah.
And in fact, I know there are, you know. Mm-hmm. But one thing that Alan would always come back to would be that you've got to be your own champion. You've got to be your own hero. Don't wait for somebody else to come along and tell you what you should do or think or say or how you should, you know, go join a movement or this, that, or the next thing. It's like, don't idolize him. This wasn't about him.
Mm.
And that's the way he wanted it, to not be about him. And there are people now who are going to be maintaining cuttingthroughthematrix.com and slowly releasing more and more material, I believe, that he never released. So there's already songs up there that he's written that would never been released before. And little bits and pieces. So you can still donate to the website. You can still, the podcasts and the content and all the mirror sites, they're still there for now. So that's good. And I'm very pleased that this is still here because that's a huge treasure trove, which cannot be equaled anywhere else as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Yeah, that's going to go on. That's exciting. Yeah, I am sure that somebody will probably keep that up. That seems like something that'll happen. So that's cool to know that that's just going to be there. It's really, that's good.
As it reads on the top of the page here, it says, in all ages and all lands, there have been those who seek truth. Their seeking is an individual search for something more than self and much more than the confines of this worldly system. It is the seeker who understands that there is more than what meets the eye, who is not afraid to make the choice to go into the unknown. The process of awakening has begun. The discovery is underway. So,
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Alan.
Yes, indeed. Thanks in order. Yeah, Alan Watt. He's a great, great person, and I'm happy to have done this episode. I'm really pleased with talking about Alan Watt first of all, and I'm sure that. I think even maybe this show will some people that hadn't even heard of him will maybe even be hearing about him for the first time, which is an interesting thought to me, but I'm sure that will probably be the case. And check out cuttingthroughthematrix.com. absolutely.
And just one more thing which I'd like to add, I think for me, I would encourage people to look at it this way if they can, is that in some way we have lost somebody here, but in another way we've gained everything. We've lost nothing.
Hmm.
We really have, you know. Yeah. That's the way I see it. That's the way he saw it. I know that. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's reassuring.
It's up to us now. It's up to us now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, I mean, this show is Themes and Memes. The website is tmpodcast.com, so you can find our show there, and I'll be sure to post this show up soon. I think actually, Adam, I'll probably post this show before the previous one we did, because I feel like this is
more important.
Yes, absolutely it is. Yes.
Yeah. The last one we had was okay. It was interesting. We were kind of just chatting about, about the absolute cesspool that, you know, media has become these days for the most part. So this has been a much more valuable conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think so.
Cool. And I hope people enjoy it.
Yeah. So thank you everybody for listening. We'll be back again. Themes and Memes will return. Anything else, Adam, before we get going here?
No, I think that's about it for now. Yeah. Hope everybody's okay out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Take care of yourselves. Don't lose hope, and just keep going. Keep going and doing your thing, whatever that happens to be. So take care. Bye, everybody.
Ciao.
This episode of Themes and Memes was recorded on March 19th, 2021.